IDXers, welcome to Market Scope for February 2001. This month, Mark Marino updates us on the return of longtime Windy City radio personality Larry Lujack to the Chicago airwaves. Now, as you may recall, Lujack made quite a career for himself after leaving Seattle's KJR and becoming afternoon personality at 890 WLS, later joining WCFL and returning to WLS for another decade. Hey, Mark, got any clunk letters in there?
There's been another surprising but major change in Chicago radio this year. Last May, Larry Lujack, after 13 years, returned to the airwaves. Listeners were happy to hear of his return on 103.5 The Beat. His show is different now. He talks a lot more, and he talks a lot more about himself. Nevertheless, it was quite interesting to hear Larry Lujack back on the air after so long being absent. This is how he sounds now on Chicago's Jammin' Oldies station.
Yeah, my pet peeve is idiots who ask me what my pet peeve is. But they actually asked her in this interview what her favorite day of the week was. And her reply was Saturday, because, in Christina's words, it represents fun. The weekend, and I like... Get this. And I like the look of how it's spelled. God. I mean, gag me with a spoon. Jeez.
Well, at least we know she knows how to read.
Yeah, well, obviously she's just way too busy to read newspapers. Never seen Tiger Woods play tennis.
He's a great tennis player. Real good tennis player, yeah.
Blonde Bimbo Part 2 coming up later. Stories about Pamela Anderson, and then Part 3 later on. Okay, I already forgot who that... Who did I say that was? Oh, yeah, Martha Stewart.
Oh, Martha Stewart. Yeah. A blonde bimbo.
But right now we got more business to take care of.
Larry Lujack!
The Super Jock Sunday Replay with Larry Lujack returns after this on the new 103.5 The Beat.
Rattle, rattle, bunker, rattle, bunker. Delphonics in Blue Mansion, September 15th and 16th, a Mungo Anderson production.
The Super Jock Sunday Replay.
Super Jock Sunday.
With Larry Lujack.
Jammin' Oldies. 103.5 The Beat.
Chaka Khan is going to be appearing Sunday, August 27th. The Jammin' on the Pier weekend. That should be fun, Uncle Lair. Four Tops on that Friday. The Saturday night dance party mixes on Saturday. And then, of course, on Sunday, Chaka Khan live. What a show she puts on.
Oh. She does good work. White Sox aren't doing Lost, I was reading the paper this morning, lost 8 of the last 12. Got beat again last night, 5-3 by Oakland.
Not good, not good.
In fact, how many does that place hold? I mean, instead of the story I read, only 30,000 bodies out there last night, which is...
You can't believe that. It's unbelievable. But Wrigley Field, where it's a lousy team, although they've played better lately. You know, they pack the place all the time. Here, the White Sox have been one of the best teams in baseball up to last couple weeks. And they're not packing the place.
How many does that place hold?
48.
Oh.
Of course, you know, half the seats there are, you've driven by that place, half the seats here are so high that whoever designed that place had to be on drugs.
Yeah, no kidding. And the Cubs got beat by San Diego, 11-9. Hey, is today the day Freddie's getting married, or is that tomorrow?
I think it's today. Saturday. People get married
on
Saturday.
Obviously, you weren't invited either.
No.
Well, that's... Yeah, of course, I'd never even met the guy, but I wouldn't want to be invited anyway. I hate weddings. Jeez, I hate weddings. You gotta buy a present, you know. And I think everybody hates going to weddings, except, you know, maybe the parents of the bride and groom, but...
Well, if there's a free bar.
Well, that's true. Have you heard, is the bride going to be wearing white?
No, I have not heard. And
well, I think the public has a right to know. I mean, he is a public figure. Maybe we should call him up later and have an exclusive, in-depth interview with him.
I'm sure his family would appreciate that.
What was he, about I mean, he's in his early 20s, right? 24?
Actually, I think he is older than what he looks. He looks like he's 21. I think he's older. I think he's maybe 26, 27. You know, it's hard to tell anymore. Oh, Brett's saying he's 28.
Oh. Geez, do you realize when I first came to Chicago in 67, Freddie wasn't even born yet. This is so depressing working with you young people. Well, I really think we should, you know, if we can, of course, I'm sure he's busy with last-minute preparations, but we should try to get him on the phone and conduct an exclusive, in-depth, hard-hitting interview as to what color the bride will be wearing, because everybody wants to know that.
Mm-hmm.
And how much he's, you know, Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston, they spent $1 million on theirs. Find out how much he's spending on his.
Well, you know, Freddie, a big afternoon guy in Chicago, and probably he's making, $8 an hour. He can afford
it. Wait a minute, I'm only making $6, and I'm a big star.
But you're on the weekend, Uncle Larry.
That's right. This demotion.
You know, by the way, they didn't tell you, you know, the great bathrooms you talked about?
Yeah.
You don't get to use those on the weekend. You have to use the public restroom. And there's the key that hangs at the front lobby, and they didn't tell you that, did they?
That, there was no mention of that in the contract.
Take a look at that fine print.
And while which reminds me, later on this morning, we're having a bathroom story. This morning featuring an exciting adventure that Farrah Fawcett had in the bathroom, and it will leave you stunned.
Larry Lujack!
The Super Jock Sunday Replay with Larry Lujack returns after this on the new 103.5 The Beat.
Northside Tackleback.
Is this a bait shop?
Yes, sir.
Well,
schedule your free consultation. Call 1-877-LASER-88. That's 1-877-LASER-88.
The Super Jock Sunday Replay. Copyright 2000. WUBT Chicago.
Jam and oldies. 103.5 The Beat.
Sunday Replay with Larry Lujack. Just when you thought we couldn't hide this anymore, you were frickin' wrong. Ladies and gentlemen, Uncle Larry.
Welcome to the weekends. We got lots of things to do this morning and this afternoon. And of course, this entire show repeats tomorrow, Sunday. Unless, of course, you're listening on Sunday and it doesn't repeat on Monday. You understood that?
I'm confused.
Jeez.
As I usually am.
Yeah, well, don't worry
about
it.
Who's on the phone?
We got a guy, let's see, Dale in Cicero. Now, Dale, I understand you deliver flowers or did in your past history. What's the deal?
Right, I do on holidays as an extra driver. And I'd like to say he's not completely, totally wrong in what he said. It depends on who made the request for the delivery. If it was him or his wife that asked these flowers be delivered to him, then it's just like ordering a pizza, you know. In that case, you know, you've asked somebody to do something for you, so therefore you're showing your, it's actually called a gratuity, you're showing your gratefulness for them. Or if you ask this person, you know, could you come into my home and set these flowers on the kitchen table and unwrap them for me, then you're asking for something extra, which in turn you, you know, should show your gratitude by giving a small something, you know.
Hi, Dale. Lair here. So I'm in the clear then. I am not the klutz my wife tried to make me out to be.
Right.
Because
unless you made this guy, you know, carry him, you know.
No. I met him at the door. They were sent to me by the general manager of the station. It's not something that I ordered delivered.
Right.
So.
Yeah. See, if you had ordered them for your wife, or your wife had ordered them for you, then it would be a different story.
Yeah.
You know, but most people don't tip the flower delivery driver because it's not something that they ordered and weren't expecting it, you know. But if it is a case, I've had a case where a woman asked us to deliver quite a large sum of flowers and stuff, and it took three or four trips from the van to her house, and she had us unwrap them and so forth. And of course, she gave us a sizable tip, but you know that would be expected in a situation like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Dale, thanks for clearing that up. I'm going to save this. I'm going to have this play this tape for my wife as proof that I am off the hook.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All but right. Hey, thanks.
Thanks, Dale.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Dale. You're fine. You're fine.
Yeah, I knew I was. I'm seldom, if ever, wrong, Matt. That's one. As you get to know me better, you'll figure that out. Anyway, I finished. Do we have enough time for this?
Oh, yeah, plenty of time.
Okay.
Bush,
all right.
What's the deal?
Yeah, okay, this is in the Globe. Now, I guess Barbara Walters did a thing on this with Laura Bush. It's George W.'s wife. On 2020, back in May. Now, I never saw this. However, they didn't have the... Barbara evidently did not have the whole story.
Hmm.
And indications are in this thing in the Globe that she, being Laura Bush, kind of was very evasive in the answers to the questions.
Hmm.
But the story is this happened back in... gee whiz, when was this? Back in the early 60s, somewhere. At that time, Laura Bush was only 17. She was a high school kid.
Right.
In a car with a girlfriend one night, ran a stop sign and smashed into a car and killed the kid who was driving the other car, also a 17-year-old guy. Snapped his neck. He died instantly.
Ooh.
Now here's the very so far this is depressing enough.
Right.
Now it gets even more depressing. The guy that she killed, and they did not tell her this, I guess, until several days later, because they knew it was going to be such a shock to her. She had just killed her own boyfriend.
Uh oh.
Man.
Oh gee.
I mean, would that screw you up psychologically for a while or forever?
No wonder she became a librarian.
Well, and she didn't get married until, she was in her 30s.
Yeah.
And there is speculation that was the reason why, because that whole thing was so traumatic. But, And then there were they go into the thing about why weren't there any charges ever filed in relation to this?
Yeah.
And they quote some ex-official of some sort as saying that he suspects that her family had enough clout to just make the whole thing go away. But she herself was not badly injured. She and her girlfriend were only in the hospital for a couple of days. With minor injuries.
Hmm.
Man, that is some story.
So why isn't, Peter Jennings and those people...
I don't know. You got to give the tabloids credit. A lot of times they dig up stuff that, the regular press guys don't find out, and a lot of times they are right. Of course, there's all the times they're wrong, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, weren't the aliens helping George, President George Bush during the war? Wasn't that one of those...
Do you read Doonesbury?
Once in a while, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That's the only comic strip I read. I think Gary Trudeau is a creative genius.
Yes, very good.
And the way he portrays George W. Bush in his strip, I think, is hysterical. With just, the big cowboy hat and nothing underneath it. There is no head. There is no brain. It's just a big cowboy hat. Yeah. It's a new 103.5 The Beat. Happy Super Jock Saturday to each and every one of you. And it's 11:26, Matt.
It is. And it's Super Jock Saturday.
Yes, it is.
What are we doing next? We got something.
I have no idea.
Okay, we have no idea what's on next, but We'll do something.
Oh, you meant for me. Yeah. I thought you meant commercials
or songs or something. That
oh,
I know.
Hey,
I meant for you. What? Why should listeners...
What was that last song we played?
Santana, Evil Ways.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, what do we do next? Here, I'll tell you what we'll do next. We'll do Dennis Rodman's story.
Oh, Dennis Rodman.
After some commercials and a song or two here.
Barry Luchak!
Weekends in the greatest city in America just got better. The Super Jock Sunday Replay returns after this on the new 103.5 The Beat. You'll feel it along the lakefront.
Stick around for a signature White Sox fireworks display presented by Miller Lite. For tickets, call 312-8311-SOX.
The Super Jock Sunday Replay.
Super Jock Sunday.
With Larry Lujack.
Jam and Oldies. 103.5 The Beat.
Thanks, Mark. Now here's a Market Scope plea for mercy. Fred has just informed me that if I don't have some good stuff for next month, he's going to fill my column for March with that 14.5-minute tape of me snoring that he made a few years ago at the Omaha Convention. So if you'd like to profile your radio market or send along some interesting radio stuff from your part of the world, drop it in the mail to me, Phil Wayne, at 1872 Myers Road East, Marion, Ohio, 43302-9160. I swear there are many pairs of ears that would be most grateful. And now, friends and neighbors, here are the musings from the members.
The first and finest WTMA in Charleston, where the news comes first.
This is Musings of the Members. The opinions are those of the speaker and do not represent the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, or its editors. Members may muse by calling the Action Line at 419-224-1609, 24 hours a day.
Hello, happy new year to all the DXers out there, and Fred, and everyone at the DX Audio Service. This is TJ from DeKalb, Illinois. Hey, I heard a new station at 740 last night testing. December 18th, I heard it on my CC radio. It's a Canadian station at 740. They call themselves Prime Time Radio 740, and they were playing nostalgic music, and they say that it was a test transmission, and they were playing all this continuous nostalgic music from the 50s and 60s, and it's interrupted, no DJs, whatever, and it's cool. And they say they're going to be on January 8th with regular programming. I wanted to know if any of the other DXs have heard it.
Happy New Year, everybody. Rock on.
Hi, this is Jim Prather in Detroit, Michigan, informing you of a call letter change in the Detroit area. 1310 AM WYUR, which was an sister station of WNIC 100.3, they've changed their call letters to WXDX, I believe, and they're now, I believe they're going to be a 24/7 Fox Sports radio station, so I just wanted to let y'all know that. Have a good holiday.
Hello, everyone. Scott Feibusch up here in Rochester, New York on December 20th. And now that Mike Lance has said such nice things about me, I guess I got to answer his questions, don't I? What is the old WTRY in Troy, New York doing? They are now sports. They are WOFX, and they're doing Fox Sports on 980. The oldies and the WTRY call letters live on, though, on the FM side of the dial at 98.3 in Rotterdam. One other thing that some folks are probably hearing already as I record this on the 20th, 740 in Toronto. You remember CBL? That signal is back on the air. It is doing adult standards in testing mode right now. It will have the call letters CHWO. Those are moving over from 1250 up in Toronto. And the official launch date will be January the 8th. So if you haven't heard of testing yet, turn on the radio to 740, and you will. And I'll try to get some tape of it signing on, and we'll get that to Fred in time for an upcoming DX Audio Service. Happy holidays and Happy New Year, everyone. Bye.
Hello, DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. Canada's newest radio station is now testing on 740 with 50,000 watts. I believe it's going to be CJPT. It was the old CHWO Oakville. It's sounding very good. They will take over officially on January the 8th, still simulcasting with 1250. Then February the 5th, it will be exclusively 740. Vancouver is getting an old sports radio station. It will be the Fan 1040. And Conestoga College in Kitchener, Ontario, 88.7, is putting an FM station on. They are now testing. They will soon be going full-time. The Detroit Tigers were offered $50 million to move their radio rights from WJR to WXYT, so that's the reason they did that. And in answer to a couple of queries, U.S. ownership in Canadian radio stations can only be of about 20%. So there's quite a bit going on, and it's very interesting to be talking to you people and giving you these musings.
Hi, Fred. This is Mike. Few quick things. Number one, a correction. WKIS, KISS 99.9, Power 96, WPOW 96.5, and WQAM 560 are not owned by Sunshine Wireless. They're owned by Beasley Reed Acquisition Unlimited Broadcasting. Beasley Reed Broadcasting. That's number one. Number two, we had a format change. The Fan 1700 WAFN has suddenly gone Spanish religion. They dropped their sports broadcasting. And the third thing is that a lot of stations down here are doing something which is very unique and very uncalled for, in my opinion. They're running the EAS test without any kind of announcement whatsoever, just putting it on. And what they're doing is, after they put it on, they drop it after that and just run music. And stations are so sloppy down here. For example, 790 WAXY was running the Temple Israel services at 8:58 when it was time to leave, right in the middle of the rabbi's sermon. They just dropped it, and that was it. And that really ticked me off, and I'm sure it ticked off a lot of other people. Well, hope radio can get better in the coming year, and play some more jingles if possible. I love the radio jingles. Keep the jingles coming, and talk a little bit about radio of the old days, where radio stations are at now and where they were back in the 60s. Also reminding you that 1560 WRAC should be coming on the air sometime in January with beautiful Spanish music and all types of interesting programming. It's going to be called Radio Airport, or in Spanish, Radio Aeropuerto. WAFN has changed their format to Spanish. They dropped the sports format, and they're a Spanish Christian station. Okay, that's the news for now. Happy New Year, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Jonathan Milam in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, hoping all of you had a great holiday season. There are just several pieces of news that you might be interested in that happened in the past few weeks. On the day after Christmas, WWGL 94.1 FM, that has been airing religious programming for as long as I can remember, changed their call letters to WTHZ and their format to 80s Rock. Their slogan, by the way, is Hits 94. Also, 94.5 WXRA and 100.3 WHSL have swapped formats. WXRA played rock up until January 2nd when they switched to country, and WHSL, which played country, now plays rock, effective the same day. Not really sure why the switch was made, but it just goes to show you that nothing's forever in radio. Also, finally, I wanted to thank Mark Durenberger for the tours of the radio station's transmitter facilities. I really enjoyed hearing those. Well, that's it for now. Happy New Year to you all. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Audrey Levine in New York City. Anyway, I have a few things to report. I went up to visit my mother in the Catskills last week before the holidays, the week of Christmas, actually, and discovered that the Clear Channel, quote, virus has infected radio up there. What used to be local radio is no more. One station known as WELV, which was 99.3 on the FM and 1370 on the AM, is no more. 1370 AM is on a satellite, and it's just music of your life. And on FM, 99.3 is KISS FM, which didn't even have DJs yet. It's just like rhythm, one hit after the other. Yeah. I don't think he'd like that. Anyway, no DJs, no commercials. They probably just setting up. So much just happened. I discovered the same thing happened to 106.3, which is a station out of Blairstown, New Jersey, which used to be WFMV, and then it was a country station, WHCY. And that, like 99.3, maintained their call letters, but, however, it's that music stuff again. And then a third station, 94.3, which is out of Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area, a town called Music, actually, is now part of 97.1, known there as Hot 97 WBHT, playing that same hit music stuff. Okay, have a happy New Year, everybody. And if anyone in the Midwest area, like the Dakotas or Wyoming or around there, Oregon, parts of Washington, like not the main city like Seattle or anything, wants to do some air checking for me, please call me at 212-614-8764. Or you can email me at ajlmusic@concentric.net. Happy New Year. Bye.
Hey, Dirty Xers. Josh Owens calling from Reidsville, North Carolina on Friday, the 12th day of January 2001. Happy New Year. Calling to you from the greatest radio station in the world. Mr. Vobey, I agree with you 100% as far as local radio goes. There's not much of it anymore. And what is there is not really what I'd call local radio. But it's just lost a lot of it, and that's why I try to keep it the best I can here at the station here. Of course, I agree with you 100%, and it's just it's a dying thing. That's all there is to it, and I'd like for it to pick up, but I don't see it happening anytime soon unless some people will get some fires lit under them. But anyway, another subject from our Where Are They Now file. Whatever happened to Honest John Parker, I think his last name was, used to be on WWL at 8:70 a.m. I used to hear him on Sunday mornings playing the really classic country music. Where did Honest John go, or whatever happened to him? Thank you much. Really enjoy the publication. Appreciate the time.
Hello, DXers. This is Tom Jackson, or TJ the DJ from DeKalb, Illinois. And, hey, I heard a station at 1610. I want to know if any of the DXers out there heard it. They broadcast a satellite feed from Fox Sports Radio, and there are no local IDs. It's just that feed from Fox Sports Radio, and it's on a few hours a night. Has anyone heard it? It's at 1610 on the AM dial. Keep rocking the radio, you guys. Rock on.
Hello, my fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. I'm sorry to report the passing of a dear friend of mine from my Cincinnati days, Bob Brown. He was quite a radio and TV legend there. WXDX in Detroit, well, Dearborn, 1310. I think they've gone all sports there with the Fox Sportsnet outfit. I heard the new 740 station sign on, and I also heard the switch thrown on 820 Cham in Hamilton when they moved up in the building where CKOC is. I hear that KWKH in Shreveport, Louisiana is about to go all sports. There's a strong rumor that 1050 Chum in Toronto will do that as soon as they get clearance to continue carrying the Blue Jays baseball games. Also, I'm picking up a station on 1290 that's going with Disney. I think it's in Richmond, Virginia. I haven't got the call letters yet. And some of the Chicago stations are coming in as clear as WJR Detroit here in very broad daylight. And picking up a lot of stuff, CKPC here in Brantford's on 1380, and I'm getting stuff on 1390 and 1370 right beside it. And today, listening to the 4 o'clock news, I heard a couple of stations even coming up under 1380, which is quite remarkable when you think about it.
Hi, y'all. It's Mark Erdman from Eve, Kansas on Tuesday, January 16th, 2001. And we've got some more format changes to alert you on. This one also from the state of Wisconsin. 1050 WEIO Eau Claire has dropped the Jones New Music of Your Life satellite format, and they're now running programming from EWTN. They have a new owner, Divine Mercy Radio, and are also going to change the call letters to WDVM to reflect the owner. Ironically, it's the second station in Wisconsin on 1050 to go with EWTN. We may have erroneously told you a couple of months back that it was 1150, but it was actually 1050 WJOK in Kakana. They have also changed owners, and they dropped 101 Sports to go with EWTN. Just kind of a neurotic thing there. Hope you enjoy the info.
Hello, this is Mike Blank. Last month I put on a call about the latitude of Jacksonville, Florida, and Jacksonville, and New Orleans, Louisiana. And the latitudes run from zero at the equator, 90 at the North Pole. So, the latitudes for Jacksonville, Florida is 302004 north, and New Orleans is 300357. So New Orleans is south of Jacksonville, Florida.
And now a DX Audio Service editorial.
Hello everyone, Scott Feibusch here in Rochester, New York. For the last few years, I've put out a column called Northeast Radio Watch. Those of you with web access can find it online at feibusch.com, and occasionally I present some segments from it right here on the DX Audio Service. Well, for the last 6 years, I've been doing a year-end wrap-up at the end of the year, and for 3 years, I've been closing out those wrap-ups with a little bit of an editorial soapbox. And those 6 years are just a tiny fraction of broadcasting's history, but it's no exaggeration to say that the industry has changed almost completely since Northeast Radio Watch's 1995 year in review. Now back then, a duopoly was a big deal, and the largest radio groups still numbered only in the low dozens of stations. In Boston, Howard Stern was still on tape delay at night on WBCN. Modern rock was brand new, and smooth jazz was just catching on in New England. Also in New England, Spanish language radio was still confined to leased time slots and rimshot or AM signals. Satellite automation was still a rarity, and hard drive automation was all but unknown. Nowhere in the entire column was there any mention of a broadcast company's stock price. Fast forward 6 years, and it becomes clear that we've all lived through one of the most significant transitional periods in broadcasting since the rise of FM, or perhaps even since the advent of television. The last 2 years have seen the first radio groups to approach the 1,000 station mark, built on the strength of a roaring stock market and the technological ability to centralize entire clusters' operations in a single desktop PC. Television viewers who might have had 60 or 70 choices in 1995 now can pick from hundreds of channels on satellite or digital cable, not to mention nearly a dozen broadcast networks appealing to ever smaller niches. Well, these are important changes, to be sure, but they've been changes in scale. What's coming next, faster than the entrenched broadcasting interests want to admit, are some changes in structure. The early signs are already visible if we take a tour of the industry's frontiers at the turn of the millennium. Consolidation. Barring major regulatory changes, there's just not much bigger most of today's broadcasting groups can get. In big markets like New York and Boston, there's room for 4 or 5 major players. Get down to the level of Binghamton or Bangor, and that number drops to 2. A few groups, Clear Channel and Vox foremost among them, are now sweeping up the droppings, as it were, building or buying clusters in the tiny unrated markets between their existing clusters. Vermont and New Hampshire saw a lot of this activity in 2000, as did New York's Southern Tier and the Hudson Valley. What's left now in places like Presque Isle and Messina is probably too small for even the medium-sized groups to play with. Let's begin by asserting that consolidation per se is not automatically evil. So many of the stations that are now in clusters in the small and medium markets are signals that didn't even exist a decade or two ago. Our Canadian neighbors consider the financial viability of a market before allocating a new signal. The FCC explicitly refuses to do so as a matter of policy. The result? In Bangor, Maine, for instance, more than 15 commercial AM and FM stations with viable signals. That's up from just 4 stations 20 years ago. Back then, the advertising pie was split among WLBZ, WABI AM and FM, and the now-defunct WGUY. Today, that split is mirrored by Clear Channel, Stephen King, and a company called Gopher Hill Broadcasting. If each company now has several signals to offer, well, that's just a welcome to the splintered world of 21st century media. If some of them just end up simulcasting others, well, that's just a response to an FCC allocation structure that's unable to adapt to the realities of rimshotters, preferring to put a weak signal in an otherwise underserved community on the edge of an area where it could serve more listeners. But there's more to consolidation than just buying a bunch of stations and moving them in together. Faced with what they saw as the challenge of grow or die, too many groups bought stations at incredible cash flow multiples on debt sustained by the promise of stock market growth and a rich vein of dot-com advertising that could be mined indefinitely. Well, what a difference a year makes then, and if you don't believe me, just call the chief financial officers at companies like Cumulus, which began its collapse before the market did, or Nassau, which pulled out of a big Hudson Valley purchase when it was unable to sustain its IPO. So what happens now? Well, for many operators, the answer is likely to be increased centralization and a growing reliance on automation. Again, that's not automatically evil. It's not 1975 anymore. There's no reason a DJ has to manually spin each song, especially overnight or on the weekend. If you were at the NRC convention this past summer in Lima, you saw evidence of that at WNRC. Even newer innovations like group contesting and national morning shows have their place if they're not abused. Are you listening, Lowry Mays? Veteran readers of Northeast Radio Watch probably sense a giant however approaching, and they're not mistaken. However, there are other forces at play out there in the broadcasting universe, and station operators who ignore them do so at their own peril. For instance, satellite radio. This is the year it all begins for real. XM and Sirius maintained a low profile at the NAB radio show in San Francisco, but the buzz was unmistakable. By the time the next Northeast Radio Watch Year in Review is written, there will be almost 200 channels of digital audio streaming down from the sky. The chicken and egg problem with receiver availability is already being addressed, thanks to deals with several big automakers to make satellite radio available in their vehicles. Think nobody will pay $10 a month for satellite radio? Ask that question again after the next 17 spot in a row break on your local group-owned broadcaster. But it's not the technology that has me excited about companies like XM and Sirius. If it were, I'd be equally bullish on in-band on-channel digital, which promises to sound as good, at least on FM, and the jury's still out on AM. No, it's all about the content, and from what we've seen in 2000, broadcasters should be worried. XM, in particular, has been hiring talented programmers like crazy, starting up at the top with Lee Abrams, the man who gave the world classic rock and smooth jazz in the 70s and 80s. To assist him, Abrams has been busy hiring some of the best in the business. The mission at XM, in Abrams' own words, is to, quote, throw out everything we've ever done in radio and start fresh with dozens of, as he puts it, living and breathing radio stations, each with its own jingles and its own t-shirts. If you're not already doing so, put yourself for a moment in the driver's seat of a car speeding through Syracuse or Springfield or Woonsocket sometime in 2001. Your choices. A dozen broadcast stations, most of them running the same half dozen formats with the same liners, read live on perhaps half of the stations, voice tracked on the others, interrupted like clockwork three times an hour for stop sets that never seem to end. Or, on satellite, 80 stations targeted for every niche available, with few commercials and some of the best talent the industry can offer. It doesn't look pretty for the home team, and there's still another round coming in this fight. LPFM. Well, no doubt NAB President Eddie Fritz is strutting proudly in his pink shirt and polka dot tie right now, with the results of his big congressional vote tucked neatly in his pocket behind his handkerchief. And there's no question that the low-power radio forces, lacking much support on a Capitol Hill well-oiled by the contributions of big broadcasters and an FCC about to lose Bill Kennard, were dealt a body blow by the vote. Nor is there any reason to think that the first couple hundred legal LPFMs will have much effect on the world of broadcasting. Many will be no different in programming or in technical reality from the hundreds of college stations already out there at the low end of the dial. Still more will be indistinguishable from the religious translators being fed from the very same satellites by the very same national operators. Hi there, Calvary. In a small handful of communities, a few broadcasters lucky enough to have found a frequency that can survive the watering down of LPFM will actually provide something of a service to their village or town, assuming they can come to terms with the reality that the expensive part of a radio station is not the initial construction, but the continued operation. The bigger threat will come from the would-be broadcasters who still can't be part of legal LPFM. Bill Kennard set out a table of lofty promises in front of them, and many of them believed in him. Now Fritz, Oxley, and company have grabbed the plates and cups and put them back in the cabinet for the big broadcasters. Can they really expect the would-be LPFMers to quietly walk away while they're still hungry? Already, some disappointed applicants are rumbling about going pirate instead, putting further strain on an FCC enforcement mechanism that's already painfully underfunded and incapable of policing the spectrum as it now exists. But two things puzzle me about this fight. First of all, what are the big guys really so afraid of? Every time I write about LPFM, I can be certain that my email a few days later will contain a few well-reasoned missives from experienced engineers pointing out that there are legitimate concerns about the problems third adjacent LPFM allocations could cause, both to I-band, in-band on-channel digital FM, and to radio reading services on subcarriers. Those are indeed reasonable worries, and it was a relief to see the provision in the Preservation of Broadcasting Act for a multi-market test to determine just how serious a threat that closer spacing might be. But if the broadcasting industry wants these concerns to be taken seriously, it has to be willing to acknowledge the role that full-power broadcasters have taken in cluttering the FM dial over the last few years. I'm getting really tired of pointing this out, but the real-world engineering examples are out there in droves, and the very broadcasters protesting most loudly against LPFM are the same ones who have no problem edging closer than 0.8 megahertz to their own signals when it suits their needs. NPR may be opposed to LPFM on a national level, for instance, Its local members' actions are something else entirely. Look at Binghamton's WSKG on 89.3 and its Vestal Translator on 89.7 a few miles away, filling the areas shadowed from the main transmitter without any worries about second adjacent interference. And don't get me started on the nationwide chains of religious broadcasters and the havoc they're wreaking with their translators jammed into any available corner of the dial. If the broadcasting industry were really that worried about interference, it would have to make an honest effort to clean up its own mess as well. That would mean a freeze on new full-power allocations, a weeding out of interfering translators, and better enforcement of night power and pattern among some AM stations that should know better. Can it be possible that somehow, deep down in their hearts, the big broadcasters know that the LPFMs, some of them anyway, might actually do enough community service and local origination to remind listeners what they're not getting from the group-owned stations? That brings me to the second puzzle in the LPFM wars. Why aren't the would-be LPFMers making a better case for themselves? They don't have much in the way of political connections, it's true, nor do they have a lot of money to spend on the cause. A few of them, frankly, are so far beyond the mainstream that they may be more of a hindrance than a help to the rest. But the LPFM advocates who have managed to get any public attention at all, not an easy task considering this is one topic almost no commercial broadcaster wants to touch on the air, and most newspapers believe the best way to cover radio is to ignore it as possible, have failed to bring to light some of the best arguments their cause can offer. Nowhere, well, outside of Northeast Radio Watch and here in the DX Audio Service anyway, have we heard much about the satellite translator land grab that's eaten up thousands of potential LPFM channels in the last few years, with signals identical in many cases to LPFM. Where's the outcry about all the AM signals left nearly abandoned, running satellite services with little or no local content, even in some cases no IDs? If the public has forgotten who's supposed to own the airwaves, why aren't the LPFM advocates doing a better job of reminding them? It may be too late to save the Kennard plan, but perhaps their loss in Congress will be just the prod the LPFMers need to begin speaking out with the voice they deserve. Is it too much to hope that Kennard himself, having lost and lost badly, will join them? The big picture. It's probably not much fun to be a big group broadcaster right now. There's debt service to meet, satellite radio looming on the horizon, and a crowd of angry LPFM wannabes outside the door asserting the moral high ground. The equipment is getting older, and there aren't many talented engineers still left who haven't escaped to the greener pastures of information technology jobs. As for finding the next Stern or Imus or Laquadera or Gambling or Tim O'Donnell, the talent pool is getting smaller year after year, too. The advertising pie isn't getting much bigger, but the newspapers, cable, and the web are cutting it into thinner slices every year. So what's a nice 80-year-old industry to do? It can, and some groups no doubt will, try to be ever leaner and meaner. No engineers available? Get by without them as best you can. Satellite programming doesn't sound as good as the local guys did. It's less expensive, and the needle on the transmitter keeps moving just the same. Still need to feed that bottom line? Crank up the music a little faster, slip an extra 60-second spot or two in. The listener won't notice, right? Ironically, that might have worked if this were still 1950 or 1960, but the real answer is something that will require the industry to work a little harder and spend a little more, and it's so simple I can summarize it in one word. Local. Local doesn't have to mean live 24/7. It doesn't even have to mean the jock is always in the same city as the transmitter. But it does mean that radio takes its community seriously. It means at least a semblance of public service, not just Sunday at 4 a.m., but throughout the day and throughout the week. It means covering local news by doing more than just reading the local paper. It means treating the listener as a sophisticated consumer who's not fooled by more rock, less talk, or the no-repeat workday, because that listener has many more choices now. If your station is just a jukebox with commercials, you can't compete in the long run with the jukebox that listener can now create inside her computer, which really does provide all of the best music, not just some of it, with no interruptions. If all your station does is plug into a national feed, you're now fighting 80 channels of truly national radio created by some of the finest talent in the business. Think going in-band on channel digital will save you? Good. Now find the receivers out there in the market. And bear in mind the words of a top group engineer just a few months ago at the NAB radio show in San Francisco, quote, "There is no consumer demand for it." The broadcasters who will survive in the long run already know these lessons. They're the ones finding ways to connect with their listeners as only local radio can. They're the small-town AMs still doggedly committed to local news in the swap shop every morning at 9:06. They're the Spanish and Asian and urban stations that have become the party lines of their communities, always there in times of crisis and times of celebration. Some of them are owned by big groups, but they retain the flavor of the place they serve. It doesn't matter if they're a 250-watt daytimer or a full-class BFM. The listeners find them and keep coming back because they know they're getting something that the satellite or the net or the MP3 jukebox can't duplicate. And when the LPFM cry is heard again, it's those broadcasters who will be able to confidently answer, "We're already providing that service." Well, may we all learn to follow the examples those broadcasters continue to set in the year that comes. May we all have a happy and safe 2001. Well, that does it for my rant, but I want to hear what you think. If you have access to the web, click over to FiveBush.com, click on the year in review, and then go over to the rant column and add your voice to the dialogue that's continuing at the end of the page. Or, if you'd like to, you can simply contribute your thoughts to musings from the members right here on the DX Audio Service. For the National Radio Club DX Audio Service, I'm Scott Feibusch in Rochester, New York.
I want to pass on some local news that I feel you should be, that you'd be interested in. In the past month, on the ABC Radio Network, Paul Harvey, at a young 82, has just signed on for 10 more years of news and commentary. In November, Dick Clark, the nation's oldest teenager on the 30th, turned 71. Well, back in September, Dick Biondi turned 68. In November, Salem Communications, based in Camarillo, California, has agreed to buy 1160 WXRT Chicago for $29 million. Salem also owns 106.7 WYLL Northwest Suburban Des Plaines, so I feel the deal will turn both stations into Christian within the next 6 months. 820 WIPA, which is an EWTN affiliate in Chicago, has been sold to NewsWeb Corporation of Chicago, who owns Channel 50 here, and it's expected to go ethnic around February the 1st. And after finalizing the sale of Catholic Family Radio's nine stations, Local 930 WAUR will be the property of Radio Center for the People with Disabilities, owned by Brad Saul in Chicago. And due to this tape's deadline, it was impossible to give you any of the College Bowl information, considering that they didn't finalize any of the 25 bowls till around December the 4th. Sorry about that, but I hope you enjoyed it on the radio anyway.
From the National Radio Club, this is the DX Audio Service.
WILM in Wilmington, Delaware will be testing on 1450 kilohertz on February the 4th. This test will take place between midnight and 0200 Eastern Standard Time. WFBS 1280 in Berwick, Pennsylvania will conduct a DX test. This test will be on Saturday, February the 17th from midnight to 0200. The test will include Morse code IDs, tones, music, and voice IDs on 1,000 watt daytime power, non-directional. Phone calls, no collect calls please, will be accepted at area code 570-752-8012. Reports with return postage must be sent to Kevin Fennessey, that's F-E-N-N-E-S-S-E-Y, at WFBS Radio, 114 Market Street, Berwick, Pennsylvania, 18603. And this test was arranged by Dave Schmidt, who will do the test for the National Radio Club.
This is the DX Audio Service.
And that, my friends, is it for this edition of the DX Audio Service. We'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. Remember, get out and support radio.